Listen, there's a fantastic feel today in the monster business. Of course, it would have to happen in California. A young man emerged from a restroom aboard an American Airlines jet on a flight from Boston to France, nude, up and down the aisle 10 minutes before landing at L.A. Oh, God. It's in Los Angeles. So bring it up, please. That's what did it to him. He took one look down there, you know, in that cloud-filled cuckoo land. Flipped his cork, and next thing you know, he's running around, in and out of the jar. I think we all secretly have an urge to run screaming nude down the middle of some aisle. Oh, I'll tell you, crime is taking a real evil turn. Now, you know, money is one thing. Guys stealing dough, the dough is just paper, after all, ultimately. But did you hear about the fantastic crime that just occurred? Well, it only occurred about 2 blocks from here. In fact, it was only about a week ago. It was really a dastardly crime. It's the only way I could describe it, dastardly. And it's a comment on our times, and it's a comment on a lot of stuff. Right down here, not more than 2 blocks away, there's a seafood restaurant. And this seafood restaurant, like a lot of them here in New York City, has in the window, the main window, they've got a tank with lobsters in it. You know, swimming around. You've seen those places, see? Well, everything was going fine. It was dinner time and people having their little martinis and stuff. They're all sitting around the seafood joint there and the waiters were rushing back and forth. And all of a sudden, out of the night, and through the swinging doors came this wino, drunkard and a skunk. He rails in, you know, and he just reels in through the swinging doors, and without any hesitation, he just reaches out, see? Just reaches out with a fantastic quick move. That's what got him, see? Because he was drunk. He comes reeling out his hand, lashes out like a snake into the tank and grabs a live lobster. And he just turns around and runs out the swinging door, and he takes off down 6th Avenue like a bat out of hell with all the waiters chasing him, trailing buns, salt shakers, yelling, "Stop, thief! Stop, stop!" The guy's running down the street with a lobster. Did you hear about that? Oh, man, what a scene right out of a Charlie Chaplin movie. Now he's crossing 6th Avenue. He's now nearing Radio City Music Hall. The crowds are screaming. He's running up the side of the building. He's carrying a great big footer. Hold it there. Thank you.
Great. And he
stole this lobster. Well, when I read that, I says, oh, you know, that is crime. Because let's face it, today, lobsters are rarer than dollar bills by any means. And it's a sad thing. And when I heard about that lobster rustler, that guy coming in out of the street, and of course overcome by insatiable hunger, he comes in out of the street reeling, reaches out and into the tank, grabs the and this is a live one, of course, he grabs a live lobster and he takes off like a bat out of hell and runs down the street with a lobster. Now I hope he got a good one, because there are little ones and big ones in them tanks. But the thing that hit me immediately, give me a little romantic music, please, if you will. I'm thinking about this lobster robbery. Now, a lot of lesser observers of the scene would probably just think that's one of those funny things that happened, you know, this little funny kicker at the end of the news kind of thing. No, I'm going to take a different view, friends, fellow victims, fellow travelers on the yellow brick road of eternity in the 20th century, I'm going to take a different view. And my view is essentially this. This is the first overt example we have of a man stealing something which is rapidly going into the realm of true value. And I just think that the guy running in, and remember, he's running the risk of being caught for robbery, everything else, you know. And what does he steal? He does not steal cash. He didn't come in and reach his hand into the till and run out with a bunch of dollar bills. He grabbed a lobster. Now, he must have thought about this. This was obviously a well-planned caper. He was a little drunk, but he knew what he was doing. Because he grabbed the lobster in the right place. I talked to one of the waiters. He says he knew about lobsters. You grab a lobster in the wrong place, you're going to know about it. I'll tell you that. This guy grabbed them right. He says he grabbed them right just perfect. He says, this guy was a good lobster man. He says, not only that, he says, you know, this same waiter I talked to him at this place, you see. He says, you know, I don't know whether you've ever tried to catch a lobster in a tank. He says, these were fresh lobsters. He says, sometimes it takes me upwards of 15 minutes to catch a lobster in it. He says, they move like, you know, like Billy be damned. This guy knew what he was doing. He says, he moved like a snake. He says, I never saw anything like it. He says, this guy could work here anytime he wanted. He said, he grabbed that lobster and he took off like a bird. And he said, as he ran down the street, he said, me and Sam and Aki, you know, we took out after him. And our towels flapping. He said, we run down the street after him, and he said, you could see the feelers and the claws and all that stuff. He says, this guy's running. And he said, people looking at him. He says, some people hollered, stop thief. And he turned right at 49th Street. He says, we never did see him again. He probably got in the subway with it. Pretend it was his date or something. And he sat down in the subway with his lobster. Now, I'd like to point out something. This shows what the price of food is getting like in our country. You know? There's going to be a day when some guy's going to come right up to you. You're going to be sitting there in this restaurant eating a steak, see, which is going to cost you half your next month's paycheck. You know, you'll be chewing away at it. You just get the knife and fork, and suddenly two masked bandits come out of the dark, grab a hold of your steak and run. You're laughing, right? Well, you know that this has happened in other countries in times of inflation. That it's a historical fact that in at least one European country, in Germany, for example, in the 20s, they had this fantastic inflation where if a guy wanted to go down and, you know, buy himself some hot dogs, you know, some frankfurters or something like that, it took a wheelbarrow full of dough. So money was nothing, you know. The frankfurters were everything. The money was nothing. So guys would get slugged in the back of the head coming home from the meat market with a pork chop. You know, it's worth $27 million. And that was bigger than the Boston bank robbery caper. And that's a fact. They were murdering guys in the street. You know, guy. If the word was out that some guy was walking down the street with 2 pounds of spare ribs, his life was, I mean, not worth a plug nickel. In fact, a plug nickel, forget it. By the way, has anybody ever seen a plug nickel? I never have. I suspect that plug nickels are very valuable because they seem to be rare. I've never seen one. I really haven't, you know. But I'm gonna sing a gentle hymn here and play upon the gentle heartstrings of poetry, because I suspect that within the next few years the lobster will join the okapi as one of Earth's most rare creatures, and the panda. And there'll be big announcements made in the paper that the International Aquarium at Washington has just acquired two actual lobsters. And people will line up for miles to go in and see a lobster. And other people, of course, old codgers of the period, will walk around and they'll tell wondrous tales about the days when a guy could go in and eat one. Actually ate a lobster. You don't know what lobsters taste like. People say, you mean you ate a lobster? You actually ate a lobster? Yep. Not only that, I put butter on them. A little salt and pepper. In fact, one time I ate two lobsters one night. Just went in this place, got two lobsters. That's all there's to it. And people say, I can't believe it. Oh, come on, you must be 1,000 years old. But it's like, roughly like saying you ate a dinosaur. You should sit down there and, you know, polish off a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Because the lobster, unfortunately, is joining that great band of animals that are quietly but sneakily departing the scene. And there will be a day. When people, by the way, I suspect there will be a day when some museum, some far-off time, will acquire a portion of an actual lobster shell. and it will confirm the suspicion that such a creature as the lobster once existed. It's like the dodo bird. Did you know that there is one stuffed dodo bird in the world? Yes. Indeed. Well, sorry. Well, what are you? I'm talking about the museums. I mean, I'm talking. All right. I want to stop it. Stop it there. Stop it. That's enough of that. Well, I knew I'd get in trouble tonight. But you know, I just think that the disappearance of the lobster really is a sad thing. It is. Because you're listening tonight to a dedicated lobster cuckoo. I really like lobsters. Do you? Oh yeah. I mean, you know, I've always said that if it's a great test. You take a chick into a place, and if she doesn't like lobster, there's a lot of other stuff she doesn't like. I would suggest that you make other arrangements quickly, because you're onto a bad scene. I mean, I really are. And it's one of Shepard's famous thumbnail tests that you can apply. There's all kinds of little tests. There's what you might call an instant litmus paper test. And I've had some great lobsters, and I'm not even going to tell you about some. But there's one place I'll never forget. One place, one time. I remember one night I'm driving along, see, and I'm going up into New England. And everybody, you know, everybody has his stories. I think the stories of restaurants the people have run into, you know, just came across them, that kind of stuff. Everybody, I've never known anybody who didn't have some kind of restaurant stories, either restaurant horror stories or restaurant fantasy stories. Oh, I've got a great restaurant horror story. You want to hear one? Okay. I go to this great restaurant one night, and I'm with this chick, you know. Oh, elegant. Oh, I mean, you know, the kind of place where just to sit down is $15, $20. Then the food starts after that, you know. Then they start figuring it up. So I go ahead with a chick, right? We sit down. And Luigi comes over and says, you wish to have a drink or would you prefer the menu? I said, we'll have a drink. He said, oh, very good, sir. What shall you have? Well, of course, the chick immediately realizes she's got a live one on the line. She orders a seven-color Pousse Café. Right, the evening started to go downhill. If you know what is it, a Pousse Café? You know what is it, a Pousse Café? Why do I know these things nobody else does? Pousse Café. Well, that's another one of Shepard's rule of thumb. Any time you're with a girl who orders a Pousse Café, arrange to go to the John and go out the window. Don't come back in. You are with a bad number. So this girl, who looked quite innocent, says, I will have a Pousse Café, please. And the waiter says, ah, the Pousse Café, of course. The Pousse Café goes for roughly 3.5, for starters. Now, a Pousse Café, I will give you a brief technical description. You know what is it, a liqueur? All right, you know that, right? Now, a liqueur is not the same as a liquor. A liqueur, right? Now, a liqueur is a sweet, generally a sickeningly sweet, after-dinner drink. Now, each liqueur has a different specific gravity. Are you aware of that? Of course, all liquids are that way. Now, an elegant seven-color Pousse Café is just that. It's served in a tiny, thin glass, like a high, thin test tube with a little stand on the bottom. And the bartender must very carefully float seven different types of after-dinner liqueurs one on top of the other until they float in layers. They don't mix, they float. That's the essence. If he mixes them, forget it. It goes back. They float so that when you hold it up to the light, you see seven layers of differing shades. You see golden chartreuse. You see green chartreuse. You see dry sec. You see anisette. You see all the various totally high expensive and fantastically high specific gravity things floating up to the top. Now, how is a Pousse Café served? Oh, with elegance. He puts a little screen on the top of it, see? And just before it's served, he takes a match, a special Pousse Café lighting match, of course, which you pay for. And, it comes direct from Marseille, France. And he goes, psh, the light goes, poof. There's a little tiny flame. Everybody in the restaurant applaud, especially Luigi. And, They bring it over and they sit it down in front of the chick and it's flaming away there saying, oh my God, what have I got here? Well, I order my usual, see, which is a wild strawberry diet, yoo-hoo. And I like it with a little vodka. And a little sprig of mint, too. It's kind of nice. So I'm sitting there, and playing it big. Things are still under control at this point. And it's not going too far down. I figure that if I keep a tight rein on things and keep my eye out, keep it peeled, everything's going to go good. So she has the Pousse Café. And the way a true Pousse Café drinker drinks a Pousse Café is that's, incidentally, part of the whole mystique of the Pousse Café. The drinker is not supposed to mix them either. So the trick of the Pousse Café is to take 7 sips, drawing off each layer in turn. And now we are down to 6. See, she holds it up to the light, and I could see him with an expert. First of all, I'd never seen this actually done. I'd heard about it. But this chick not only did it, but every time she would sip with that elegant little bird's mouth, she would go like that. The crowd at the bar would applaud, because by now this exhibition was attracting much attention. And she sipped off the 6 remaining layers, and I'm down to the ice cubes now, and my wild strawberry Yoo-Hoo vodka, which is not bad. You know what it's called? Rasputin's Revenge. That drink. If any of you would like to order that drink, you just go into any bar that knows what the score is and just say, I'll have a Rasputin's Revenge. And he'll say, what the hell is that? And you say, that is 2 jiggers of wild strawberry diet Yoo-Hoo, 1 jigger of Smirnoff vodka, 2 ice cubes, and a sprig of mint. Now, either you'll get thrown out, or you'll become the local celebrity in the bar, one or the other. So, you like these drinks I invent, don't you? So, so nevertheless, there I am sitting there with my Rasputin's Revenge, and I'm toying with the idea of having another one, because the first one didn't make much of a dent. And I am headed off at the pass when the chick opposite me says, Luigi, and Luigi comes over, and she says, I will have another one, would you please tell him to make it a double. A double? My God almighty, a double. And of course, Luigi sung, he walked away on tippy toes, singing. Because Luigi obviously was on a percentage basis with the bar, and a double 7-layer Pousse Café runs into astronomical figures. I do not even have to discuss what they come for. In fact, they're not even listed on the average bar menu. It's the kind of thing that you send to Tiffany's for, see. So, nevertheless, she gets her double 7-layer Pousse Café. And by the way, it gives double the flame, too. Boom! Up it goes. My eyebrows are singed, and I'm sitting there. And I order another Rasputin's Revenge. We're sitting quietly. I have another ploy, if you don't mind. Another ploy. Which is kind of a good ploy when I'm making sparkling conversations such as, you like seafood? That's good. Either the girl says, oh, icky. Or else she says, yummy. Now, both can be dangerous. First of all, she says, oh, yummy. Watch out. That's liable to result in Armando's specialty, which is 3 lobsters on a 3-inch steak accompanied with oyster sauce, which can take you way out into the wild blue yonder of problems when it comes to settling up after the gay festive evening. Now, on the other hand, if she says, oh, ugh, icky, that means you've got a dead one on the string, and you might as well prepare right now. You've got yesterday's cake of yeast with you tonight, and you might as well just take her home quietly after the meal, and you can't win them all. So nevertheless, I'm sitting there and making my conversation when Luigi comes over. This is my horror story, right? You want to hear it? All right, now it's getting right down to the point. And by now, of course, Rasputin's Revenge has warmed the cockles of the heart. I'm getting expansive. The girl is now down around layer 5 on her second double Pousse Café. Everything is under control. And, it's kind of, everything's looking kind of good. And I look over to my right, and I see this red wallpaper. And even that looked kind of good, you see, because Rasputin's Revenge does that to you. It makes a lot of things look good. So we're talking away there, and we're playing kneesy which is kind of fun. Nisi is played in most of these little French restaurants. They have these little tiny tables, you know, about the size of a Yugoslavian stamp. And usually one or sometimes as many as three legs are cut at odd and random lengths. Now, the table then tends to tilt wildly from time to time. You've been in restaurants like that, the table constantly tilts. Now, I know why this is. I will not bring it up. But I have often, on occasion, gone into restaurants like this. You lean your elbow, the table tilts, and there goes your $2 drink on the floor. And for $2, you bring you another one. So those tables are very clever. They're good money makers. So I'm sitting there next to my little table there, being very careful. Now, when you play the game in these little tables, one of the great things about them is you can stick your knees under them, and the girls' knees stick under them too. And since it's a very, very tiny table, your knees touch somewhat erotically. And that's called kneesy. And you sit there and you keep saying, "Oh, am I bumping you?" See, of course you're bumping her. You know, you can just see her face gets red every couple of minutes. So you're really bumping her. So you move back again. And it's kind of a, you know, it's a little counterpoint to the excitement of drinking strawberry Yoo-hoo. And it just, the whole evening was just getting greater and greater, see. And by now, this is the moment when it's at its most dangerous. Over in the corner, the entertainment begins. You thought you could get out before it started, but no. Because that means not only are you going to have to sit through that, because this is going to cause you to have to yell at her all the way through the meal now, but in addition to that, eventually the guy playing the violin will come over and stand by your table and play the violin in your ear, which is going to cost you $10. So I'm sitting there, and they had one of these cockamamie Dixie bands. You know, there's a certain kind of chic place in town that thinks Dixie is chic, you know. So this Dixie band starts to honk away over the corners. They're honking away, seeing them sitting there. Yeah. And I'm playing it real good, and I got my old, you know, I got my old Rasputin's Revenge, and I keep swirling it with the swirler there, the swizzle stick. They had a swizzle stick, see, that was made in the form of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. It's kind of a neo-Italian French restaurant, and I'm swizzling away there, and I'm crushing the mint. I'm trying to look very romantic. But that overcomes Luigi. And Luigi says, your salad, sir. And he puts the salad down in front of the chick, and he puts one down in front of me. Well, I'm looking down at the salad, and I'm sipping away at Rasputin's Revenge. Everything's going cool. The band is playing away there. And I might point out that very few things are more irritating to a good night eating than a Dixie band playing away. This is not the ideal dinner music. Do you agree with that? You know? In fact, I make it a point to never go near a place where there's Dixieland of any type being played. This is not my dish of tea. But nevertheless, we're here, you see. And they're honking away. And they usually wear those corny red and white striped shirts, you know, that kind of thing, with the fake straw hats and all that. And they keep winking at you. And the guy with a trombone, you know, keeps putting that, you know, that tin derby over the front of it. He goes, quack, 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 quack. And everybody, so, you know, they sit there and pound on glasses and stuff. So my knee is, it's getting nice and warm. Everything's working good. But all of a sudden, I glance down at this unbelievably expensive chef's salad, which is in front of my plate. I look down at it. Comes in one of these, it actually was a Florentine plastic bowl. And kind of nice. It had these Greek designs on the side. Now, I don't know how they mixed Florentine and Greek, but they did. So, you know, I look down there and my salad, and I'm aware of some curious... Well, let's put it this way. We are creatures of habit, right? We are also creatures of instinct, which we rarely discuss. We are also creatures of environment. All three of those things combine to make the you so lovable, which is the lovable you, which is the you that you have constantly been trying to change and find totally unable to do so. Because forces beyond which you have no control have molded you like a piece of silly putty into the foolish, cloddish mold that you now present to the world. Those three things, they, by the way, will appear on the Blue Book exam. I would suggest you make a note of those three things. Environment, put that down. A, environment. A bee? You ready for that? It's an instinct. Put that one down, see? All right, you like that one, huh? Environment, instinct. Three, heredity. Those are the three forces that have combined to make you the clod that you are, and you will not be able to escape them. So those three elements were at work on me. Now, what is the element of instinct? Let's examine each in its turn. Let's examine each in its turn. Let's take heredity. There's not a damn thing you can do about that. Heredity. If your father was a short, fat guy that lost his hair at the age of 9, well, the chances are you're going to be a short, fat guy that loses his hair at the age of 3. So, that's heredity. Right? Nothing you can do. Now, what about environment? Damn little you can do there, because you're trapped before you can fight. There you are, 6 months old, and you already got a bad environment. Now, the other thing, you may do something about it, you know, but not much. Instinct. All you can do is fight instinct. But there has been, on record, not one case ever of anyone winning the fight. In other words, the fight against your instincts is a losing fight, right? Have you ever tried to fight your instincts? Oh, no. Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. So I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden my instinct takes over. I sense something. The old jungle instinct of the jungle man. I sense something looking at me. I peer around, and I see it is looking at me for my salad. I raise carefully the leaf of lettuce, and I see two beady eyes peering at me from under the salad. I raise it a little higher, and I see it is about a 17-pound, gigantic, green, black-eyed, red-footed, mean-looking, angry caterpillar. He must have weighed, 6-7 pounds. And that little mother's looking right at me. Great bacon. Now, that's a problem. Instantly, instinct again takes over. Instantly, I am cold sober. Rasputin's revenge is gone. I look up at Luigi, and I say, Luigi. And he says, oui, monsieur. I says, Luigi. Without saying anything, I just lift the lettuce, and he looks down. He says, I see. You wish to see French dressing instead of the Italian. I says, indeed, mo. And he takes it away, see. And the chick says, gee, what was the matter with the salad? I says, nothing, honey, nothing. And she says, can I have another drink? I says, go ahead, honey. I says, Luigi, another Pousse Café was the lady. And I says, oh, by the way, Luigi, where is he, John? He says, out in the back. 12 minutes later, I'm running down the alley, making a left turn at 46th Street, without ever looking back. I ain't stopped running since, really, one way or another. She's probably still sitting there drinking Pousse Cafés. She's had over 1,200 of them since I left. And that ends tonight's salute to Julia Child. Yes, Adventures in Eden comes to you every night at the same time. So be ready for all the excitement, all the fun. Yes, all the excitement and all the fun of truly exhilarating Eden. Except here's the public service.